Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about something that might seem a little off topic for a mountain bike performance training podcast, but I'm hoping that by the end of it, you'll see how this ties intimately into your goals, both on and off the bike. And that is how your chemistry, your internal chemistry specifically, affects your consciousness. Now, consciousness is one of those terms that I'm sure someone out there has a deeper, more philosophical definition than what I'm using here, and that's fine. But for our purposes here, I am using this term to be defined as how you are experiencing the world. And how you are experiencing the world plays a direct role in your performance and your overall happiness and mindset. And controlling your consciousness, how to influence it specifically in a positive direction. This is one of the biggest questions that's been faced by mankind since, you know, the dawn of time. So, and a big part of controlling and impacting your consciousness is your internal chemistry. Now, a good example for this, something I think most people would readily recognize, is how taking a drug like LSD or magic mushrooms, how these would influence your consciousness. Your consciousness, how you are experiencing the world and perceiving the world, would definitely change if you took enough of these drugs. And what's happening there, right? Well, it's basically introducing a chemical, which is changing your internal chemistry, and this internal chemistry is influencing your consciousness. So again, this is a pretty extreme example, the one that I think, again, most people would readily recognize. But once you start to recognize that, you can see how this takes place in a lot of different ways on a lot of different levels, right? So another example of using drugs to influence our internal chemistry would be using antidepressants for depression. You know, one of the markers of clinical depression are changes in your hormones, lowered levels of dopamine and serotonin, or an inability to use them effectively. Excuse me. And so you can take a drug, or this is how some of the antidepressants, a lot of the antidepressants work, is they influence your internal chemistry in some way, and this in turn changes your consciousness. It, you know, hopefully lessens the depression, which changes your consciousness, how you are experiencing the world, and this in turn leads to your ability to perform better and be happy and stuff like that. So again, this is another example of using an external drug to influence your internal chemistry and how that internal chemistry directly influences your consciousness. Now, what about on a non-external drug level, right? Like what about things that you produce yourself? So a good example here would be adrenaline. Okay, if you get a shot of adrenaline either from, you know, someone startling you, or something happens that startles you or scares you, or you're really nervous before an event like a race, or, you know, giving a talk to a bunch of people, you know, public speaking, and you get this adrenaline introduced into your system, and adrenaline will affect your consciousness. No matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, it will have some effect on your consciousness. And so on a performance level, that can have an impact, right? Like, so if you're, you know, before a race or something, you're having trouble controlling your anxiety, then part of that is usually too much stress hormones, and adrenaline being one of them. Another way that this relates to your performance is carbon dioxide levels. So one of the things that I've really been trying to help riders understand is that that breathless feeling that you get, that there's a difference between, excuse me, getting breathless and running out of gas, right? So running out of gas, like bonking, hitting the wall, that's like at the end of a long, hard ride, you're just, you know, spent. And you could stop and rest for, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes even, and you'd still be spent, right? Like you don't have any more energy left. That's running out of gas. Getting breathless is something different. So, you know, you're going up a hard hill early on in a ride, and it's not an energy problem, right? It's just you start to get breathless. You start to get that panicky, like I can't breathe feeling, and that forces you to slow down or stop. And now once you've done that and you've caught your breath, you're fine, right? Like energetically, you're still fine. It wasn't an energy problem. It was a breathless problem. And well, what triggers that? That's rising levels of carbon dioxide, CO2. As CO2 levels rise in your blood, it triggers that breathless feeling, that I need to breathe feeling. And so again, this is your internal chemistry directly affecting your consciousness. How you are perceiving your world at the moment is being directly influenced by these rising CO2 levels, and it can get really unpleasant. I mean, I've definitely had some moments, you know, riding at almost 10,000 feet, pushing up a hard climb. Man, you get to the top and you're like, man, I may die. Like, I cannot catch my breath. And it's not a good feeling. And it takes some focus and concentration to actually not start to panic a little bit if you push yourself too hard into that. And that is because psychologically, you are being really affected by those rising levels of CO2. So again, these are all examples of how your internal chemistry, either through internal drugs or internal mechanisms and changes, how these things change your consciousness. And we may hate to admit it, but again, this internal chemistry does affect our consciousness. And this is going to affect how we perform on and off the bike, you know, in real life and all that. So in without having an understanding of this and a plan for how you can control it and hopefully influence it in a positive direction, then you're just leaving it to chance. Okay, so if your internal chemistry is so important, how can we influence it? Now, we've talked about using drugs. Okay, you can definitely use drugs, and there are definitely times for using drugs. Like if you have severe clinical depression, taking antidepressants is definitely something that you should be doing under a doctor's orders. But there are a lot of times when we can influence our internal chemistry without drugs in a positive direction and help our performance and our mindset and well-being and happiness and all of that. And the answer is through breathing. So breathing is a direct line into these things. Okay, so how you breathe and the rate that you breathe at is going to directly influence your internal chemistry in some pretty profound ways. So first, the muscles that you use to breathe are going to have an effect on this. So your body is designed to use the diaphragm to drive your breathing. And the diaphragm is the dome-shaped muscle on the bottom of your lungs. So as you breathe in, that muscle flattens out and that creates the negative pressure, which pulls air into the lungs. And then as you're breathing out, that the muscle relaxes, your diaphragm relaxes and it returns to that dome shape, which pushes up on the lungs and pushes the the carbon dioxide and whatever air is left in the lungs out. And so it's the diaphragm straightening out from the dome shape and then returning to the dome shape that is supposed to drive the bulk of our breathing. That's the primary muscle that we should be using to breathe. But the problem is that for several reasons, we usually develop some dysfunctional breathing patterns. And so, and breathing with the diaphragm is not reinforced like it should be. And the most common dysfunction that you usually find is using the muscles in the chest area to drive your breathing. And so you see this, if someone's breathing and you see their chest rising up and down, like if you were to put your hand on their chest, your hand would move up and down. This is a sign of chest breathing. So when you're chest breathing, it's not only less efficient, right? So from a performance standpoint, you are not breathing nearly as efficiently as you could and should be breathing. But on top of that, breathing with your chest drives a stress response. It creates a stress response in the body. So chest breathing is supposed to only be used during periods of high exertion and high stress. So something like running for your life or being in a fight or something like that. So if you're breathing with your chest, it's a signal to your body that you're under stress. And this is going to increase the amount of stress hormones that you have in your bloodstream. And so, I've heard it best described as chest breathing is like being chased by the world's slowest bear all day long, right? Like you're breathing in a manner like you would be, you're being chased by a bear, right? Like chest breathing. But it's a slow bear and it never catches you. So you're just doing it all day long. But the problem is that you're still triggering the stress response that comes along with that chest breathing. So you have a less efficient breathing pattern, so you're getting a less efficient gas exchange in the lungs as well, and that leads to higher CO2 levels. And so these higher CO2 levels, along with the especially when you're performing, along with the increased stress hormones, is going to have a direct effect on your internal chemistry, which affects your consciousness. Okay, so you're going to have more of a tendency to feel stressed, and you're going to have less control of your emotions under stressful conditions if you're chest breathing. It's just you're physically making it harder for yourself to keep control of these things because of the internal chemistry changes that it creates. So a second thing to consider is what you're using to breathe. What hole are you taking, or holes are you taking air in? And specifically, you can either breathe through your nose or your mouth. And much like the diaphragm, we're made to breathe one way, but we generally start to develop breathing dysfunctions if these things aren't reinforced. And so we're made to be nose breathers. The breathing with your nose, you should read the book Breathe by James Nestor. Excuse me. It's a great look at our history and how you can literally see changes in the skulls of people after the Industrial Revolution, and we started eating softer foods, and how that changed the shape of the face and the palate, and that directly influenced how hard it was to nose breathe, which led to more mouth breathing, which just reinforced this whole thing. And so we are made to be nose breathers. That's how we're designed to take in most of our air. And there's a few reasons for this. Like, one, it is easier to engage your diaphragm when you're breathing through your nose. Now, I'm not saying that it's impossible to breathe with your diaphragm when you're breathing through your mouth. You definitely can. You can train yourself to do that. But it's much easier to engage the diaphragm, especially when you're starting out or when you're just, breathing and not trying to be conscious of it. So when you're at rest, you should be breathing through your nose instead of breathing through your mouth. It's going to make it easier to engage that diaphragm. Breathing through your nose also mixes nitrous oxide, or NO2, into the air that you're taking in. Now, NO2 is a vasodilator, which means that it opens up blood vessels, and that makes it easier for blood to flow. And when it's easier for blood to flow, it makes it easier to get oxygen to working muscles, and it makes it easier to take up waste products like CO2 and get them out. So you're not going to have CO2 levels rise as fast if your blood is flowing easier. And so, again, since rising levels of CO2 are what trigger that panicky, I can't breathe feeling, then this will help control improve your performance. Because you're getting more oxygen, easier to working muscles, but it's also going to help control anxiety, because it's going to help control the rise in CO2. And again, so you don't get that nitrous oxide when you breathe through your mouth. Nitrous oxide pools in your sinuses, and so when you breathe in through the nose, you're getting that nitrous oxide mixed in, which you don't get through the mouth. So again, that easier engagement of the diaphragm and the intake of nitrous oxide are two things that will directly affect your chemistry, your internal chemistry, which again is going to affect your consciousness and your performance. And so this leads us to the third point, which is how much you breathe having an effect. Now, most people tend to overbreathe, and this means that they're breathing more than what is needed for what they're doing. Now, there's several problems with this, but one of the problems that comes along with this is that you end up with chronically lowered levels of CO2, because you're not only taking in more oxygen than you need, but every time you exhale, you're also exhaling CO2, and you end up exhaling more CO2 than you should. And so you may be thinking, well, like, who cares? Because CO2 is bad, and as it rises, then I get that panicky, I can't breathe feeling. So then lowered levels would be good. The problem is that when you're doing this on a chronic basis, right, like you're overbreathing all the time, and just for the record, sit and time your breathing, and anything over 6 to 8 breaths per minute is going to be considered overbreathing, and most people tend to do that. And so when So as you're overbreathing, you're also exhaling the CO2. And if you're doing this chronically, then you're getting chronically lowered levels of carbon dioxide at rest. And this creates a new set point for your body, which means that it takes even less of a rise in CO2 to start to trigger that panicky, I can't breathe feeling. So there is a time and a place to purposefully overbreathe, right? So like if you're coming up on a hill and you start to overbreathe, so that's one of the things that I'll tell people that I work with, this is a way to use your breathing proactively to help drive your performance, is instead of waiting to start breathing harder after you start working harder, start breathing harder in anticipation of working harder, okay? So you got a hard hill coming up, like shift into a harder breathing gear, start breathing harder at the bottom of the hill before you actually get on it and going into the hill. And what that's going to do is it's going to blow off CO2 in anticipation of the rising levels that are about to happen because of the hill. And it'll allow you to push harder and further before you trigger that the CO2 levels get high enough to trigger that panicky, I can't breathe feeling. So that's a way to use overbreathing on purpose to lower CO2 levels. But you don't want to be doing it at rest and be doing it all day long, because again, now you have chronically lowered levels and your body gets used to whatever it is that you're doing to it all the time. And so if you have chronically lower levels of CO2, then it's going to get used to those. And again, that's going to mean that it's even more sensitive, excuse me, to rising levels of CO2. And so this has a huge impact on your consciousness while you're performing. You know, when you get that little part in your brain starts to get tickled saying, I can't breathe, I need to catch my breath, then you can't ignore it, right? Like it starts to become very, it demands your attention, all right? And it's designed that way, right? Because usually if you have rising levels of carbon dioxide, you have your oxygen levels are going down. And so it's the oxygen levels that your body's worried about, but it uses what's known as a negative feedback loop. It looks at a waste product of the metabolism of oxygen to monitor oxygen levels, because if you have rising levels of CO2, then that indicates lowering levels of oxygen. And it doesn't want to wait until your oxygen levels get low enough to be in danger, because you don't want to risk passing out. And so it monitors the rising levels of CO2 to tell it how much oxygen you have. So it thinks that you're getting to dangerously low oxygen levels and you're risking passing out. And so that's why you are forced to stop. It is a survival mechanism that you can't bypass through sheer willpower. Like, you can definitely train yourself to get more comfortable with it. That's one of the byproducts of the CO2 tolerance training that I advocate, where you're actually using breath holds during your cardio to trigger this response. But it allows you a chance to become, a term that I loved was, you know, relaxed suffocation. Like, that's what you're looking for, but still suffocation. It still sucks, right? And eventually you're going to have to breathe. And so, this internal chemistry change plays a huge role on your performance. And so learning how to improve this is a huge, huge thing. It's a very important part of improving your performance on the bike. So this is a few things to keep in mind. One other thing, as far as overbreathing goes, is that overbreathing can also be a contributing factor to anxiety and panic attacks. And so if you are prone to these, to anxiety or panic attacks, and something triggers that, well, then you start to breathe faster and you start to lower your levels of CO2 even more. And so if you tend to overbreathe in general, and so you've got chronically lowered levels of CO2, and then you have something trigger a panic or anxiety response, and you start to breathe even more and you're lowering your levels of CO2 even more, you start to run into problems, because your body needs carbon dioxide to release red blood cells or oxygen from red blood cells. It's known as the Bohr effect. So you can have 100% saturation of red blood cells, of oxygen in your red blood cells. But if you don't have the carbon dioxide available to offload it fast enough, then your body can't get it to the working muscles and use it. And so you actually start to blow off so much CO2 that you can't get the oxygen offloaded, and you start to get your body senses that muscles are not getting oxygen. And this also triggers that panicky, I can't breathe response, which again starts, you start breathing even more, and it becomes this downward spiral. And this is why having someone who's having a panic attack or anxiety attack breathe into a paper bag can help with that. You know, again, it's not a guarantee, but it can help with that, because what you're doing is you're recirculating that CO2 as they're breathing into the bag, they're breathing CO2 out. And as they breathe in, they're breathing some of that CO2 back in. And so they're raising their levels of CO2, which allows enough oxygen to get released to let the muscles get the oxygen they need to relieve that signal to the brain. And so but if you are chronically over breathing, both on an everyday basis and also when you're exercising, and you have these chronically lowered levels of carbon dioxide, then you're making the risk of an anxiety or panic, something that causes that for you to create this loop of doom where you're like stuck in this, I can't breathe, which makes it even worse. And so, so just another reason that this internal chemistry can affect your consciousness, because if your CO2 levels get too low, it can create a very similar feeling, which is something that, again, it's a survival mechanism that you have to deal with. And so learning how to control your internal chemistry through your breathing it's just vital. I can't emphasize how foundational it is for your performance and your mindset and so many things. And so the basics, again, that we talked about here are breathing with your diaphragm, you know, avoiding chest breathing and breathing with your diaphragm both at rest and when you're exercising, using the nose as much as possible to drive your breathing, especially at rest. Like when you're just sitting there, you should be nose breathing. You should not be mouth breathing when you're at rest. And then also being aware of overbreathing, both at rest and during exercise. And again, there's a time to use it, but there's a difference between purposefully using overbreathing in anticipation of a hard effort and just unconsciously overbreathing as a result of just bad breathing habits. Okay, two totally different things. And so you want to avoid that, the latter, and use the former, right? Use the purposeful overbreathing in specific situations, and you want to avoid the chronic overbreathing at rest and just when you're exercising as well, just being aware of those things. And, you know, trying to use your nose while you're exercising and riding is a good way to help control overbreathing on some level. So, but these three things are going to have a huge impact on your chemistry and consciousness. And beyond this, I mean, just this has been a journey that I've always been somewhat into breath work and somewhat in. I've had a meditation practice for a long time, but it's really been over the last year that I've gotten really into this and taken a deep dive into the science. Like that's the really interesting thing, is this isn't just like opinion, right? At this point, there is a ton of science behind breathing and, you know, your internal chemistry affects things. And so this science, it's going to take a while to get to the mainstream, but in 10, 15 years, a lot more people are going to be aware of the power of breathing, the use of CO2 tolerance training, you know, breath hold training for performance. So, you know, as I've gotten into this, and taking a look at more of the science and everything behind it, I've started to realize like this is, it's so powerful on so many different levels, and it can help you mentally, physically, spiritually, and it's free, it's accessible to everyone. There's really no excuse for not using your breathing and just being conscious and aware of your breathing. And so, it's huge. And so it's a big part of what I've been doing personally, been doing with my clients. I've got the 40 plus MTB Rider program that I'm going to be releasing at the end of the year. I'm going to have breath work and mindfulness as part of that program, because I feel it's a huge part of being able to ride at a good level as you're getting older and be able to ride for a lifetime, because you really have to start getting the most out of what you got. And what you got is usually starting to diminish a little bit. And so one of the ways that you can do that is through breathing, both having a daily breathing practice and also understanding how to use your breathing in your workouts and your rides to help drive your performance. But those things, like I said, they're foundational for what you should, for what you're doing in your workouts and on the bike. And so, again, it'll be something I'm going to be emphasizing more in the coming year, looking to have some online workshops and classes and some things to really, for people who are interested in diving deeper into breathing and breath work and how it can apply to their lives and riding. I'm looking to do some stuff over the next year, because again, like, the whole reason that I started MTB Strength Training Systems was to, you know, share what I find effective in my own practice and with the people that I work with all of you, right? And when I first started this in 2005, no one else was doing it. And it's great that there's a lot of other, you know, well, not a lot, but there's several other people who are, you know, focusing on mountain bike strength training on some level. But my mission has always been to bring you guys the best of what I am finding to work. And so sometimes those things are a little off the beaten path, things like isometrics and again, this, you know, breath hold training and breath work in general. But they're things that I have found to be literally transformational for myself and my training. And so this is why I'm going to start, you know, sharing these things with everyone more. And really, you're going to notice less of an emphasis on things like, you know, traditional kettlebell training and heavy weightlifting, and more of an emphasis on these other things, because I feel like that, especially for the riders as we get older, like, these things have way more to offer us than just, you know, lifting heavy weights and pounding out hard intervals. And that, you know, besides the workout benefits, you start to realize that there's more to life than riding, which is something that my 20-year-old, some, you know, odd self would have cringed at hearing me say, but there is. And you start to want more out of your experience in life with the people around you and the things that you're doing, and that the breathing plays a big role in your ability to do that as well. And so, anyways, I'm really excited to bring this stuff more to you guys. So, hopefully this podcast has got you guys thinking about some new things. Again, your internal chemistry does affect your consciousness, and that can be affected both positively and negatively. Like, you're the one who's ultimately going to be in control of it, and whether you're being conscious of it or not, like, that's still a decision, right? But, you know, your consciousness is affected by this internal chemistry, which is affected by your breathing. And so, you know, make a choice to take control of that and move these things in a positive direction, and you're really going to see a lot of benefits in so many different areas. So, all right, so wrap this thing up. Remember to check me out at bikejames.com. You can find out a lot more about breathing. I've got CO2 tolerance workouts that you can check out, see what are those exactly. You know, if you type in breathing or breath work in the search feature there, you're going to find several podcasts and articles and things that I've been doing lately that talk about different aspects of this stuff. Be sure to sign up for the newsletter while you're there if you haven't already. You get a free workout as well as weekly updates, different training articles and stuff that I send out. So definitely a great training resource for you. And also, while you're surfing around the web, check out pedalinginnovations.com. And that is where you'll find the Catalyst pedal. That is the pedal that I invented based on the science and movement principles of how to pedal the bike. And so it is a flat pedal that is longer than a normal flat pedal that allows you to support both ends of your arch, which creates a double pressure point, right? Now, instead of a single pressure point at the ball of your foot, you now have a pressure point at the ball of your foot and your heel, which creates a, you know, balanced forces going into the pedal, which it gives you the performance that you used to think you needed clipless pedals for, with the fun and freedom of flats and also the comfort that no other pedal can match, because now that your foot is supported properly, it takes stress off of the you know, plantar fascia and the Achilles tendon and calf and knees and low back and a lot of areas that riders have overuse injuries or just, you know, nagging pain. A lot of these areas you find out are really a result of poor foot support, from pedals that are too small based on an antiquated theory on pedaling. So, but anyways, check out pedalinginnovations.com. You can find out more about the science and stuff behind the Catalyst pedal. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And again, nothing in the industry like that. That's how much we believe in this thing. And so anyways, that's going to do it for now. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast, and I will talk to everyone next time.